The message is we're going to just begin something new today. We finished up just our study of Jude. So actually what we're going to start has some tangential connection to Jude, which I'm not going to articulate at the moment. But I would like us to take just a few weeks, and I'd like for us to consider what we might call the issues of our day, the issues of our time. So help me for a moment. Help me identify some of the things that are the issues of our day, the issues of our time. What might they be?
Same-sex
so give me
marriage.
Some examples. Say that?
Same-sex marriage.
Same-sex marriage.
War.
War.
Middle East crisis. Terrorism.
Okay, terrorism, Middle East crises.
Global warming and drought.
Global warming and drought.
Market volatility.
Market volatility. Okay, turmoil in the financial markets. Other things. Issues for our day. Issues for our time.
Disparity.
Okay, disparity. Economic disparity or other? Okay.
Is there absolute truth? Does such a thing exist?
Okay, is there such a thing as truth?
Absolute.
Absolute truth, okay.
Death. People keep dying.
People keep dying, okay? Still an issue. Okay, good. So I want us to just consider some of the issues of our day, some of the issues of our time. Issues typically have sides, don't they? And we take positions on issues. What side of blank issue are you on? Global warming, what side are you on the global warming issue? You know, or what's your position on this or that issue? What's your position on same-sex marriage? So issues typically have sides, and we take positions on them. But then perhaps when you are at gatherings, maybe gatherings of friends or family, maybe gatherings with friends, maybe gatherings with work associates, one of two things either happens. Either you avoid talking about the issues. You ever been at a place and you walk away and say, you know, we avoided talking about the issues. You know, it was like the elephant in the room and everybody ignored it. So we avoided talking about the issues. Or that those gatherings of families and friends and associates, you argue your positions, you know, on the issues. And sometimes you alternate back and forth between those. I remember last time we argued about our positions, let's avoid it this time, right? Then you avoid it, and then you get all stirred up inside, and so next time you're arguing about it again. But, you know, sometimes we avoid the issues. You know, other times we argue whatever position, we argue our side on the issue. Behind the positions that we take on issues, behind whatever side you are on the issues of our day, there's usually some understanding of what it means to be a human being and what it means to live a human life. How should we respond to terrorism? Well, behind how you think we should deal with terrorism is some understanding of what does it mean to be a human being? What does it mean to live a human life? What rights do you have as a human being? Do you have the right to choose? What rights do human beings have? What responsibilities go with being human? How should we understand human sexuality? You know, what does it mean to be human, you know, and have sexual things that are part of being human and living a human life? You know, does the human life have a purpose? So behind positions that we take on major issues, we often have some understanding of what does it mean to be a human being? What does it mean to live a human life? So I want us to consider a few of the issues of our day. I'm going to focus especially, this is looking ahead a little bit, on some of the issues that surround human sexuality, how those things of human sexuality have surfaced in our present. In the current time. But I don't want to simply tell you my position on this or that issue. I think you'll probably become clear what some of my positions are, what side I'm on. But my goal isn't just to tell you what my position is on this or that issue. If I were to do that, if I just said this is Roger's position on this issue, I mean, you would be happy and you would think I'm right if you agree with me with whatever my position is. Well, that was a great service. Roger was on today. That means you agree with me. And of course, if I just gave you my position, you'd be crabby, think I'm wrong if you disagree with me. If you're on the other side of the issue, you take a different position, then you'd say, I don't know what's wrong with Roger today, but that wasn't very good. So I don't want to just simply tell you my position and have you either be happy or crabby, you know, depending on whether you agree with me or disagree with me. I would like for all of us to consider, how does a person come to have a position on issues of our day? How do you decide what your position is? Do you pull it out of the hat? Do you have the position that you have on whatever issue it might be? Do you have that position because you're a baby boomer? And this is how baby boomers think about this issue. You know, or do you have the position that you have because you're a millennial? It might be the same, might be different than the baby boomers. Do you have the positions that you have because you know how to think for yourself? Well, you pride yourself, I think for myself. Is that why you have the positions that you have? Do you have the positions that you have because you have a heart for trees? Or a heart for something else? I hold this position because I have a heart for trees. Do you have the positions that you have because you're a man or because you're a woman? Do you have the position that you have because you're white? Do you have the position that you have because you grew up in the Midwest? This is how you were raised. So how does a person come to have a position in the issues of our time? I want you to consider, how do you come to have positions on the issues of our day? So there's what we're going to be about. Today, what I would like to do is just something that I think all of us need to know with respect to any and every position that we have on any and every issue. So something that I think all of us need to know with respect to any position you have, every position you have on any and every issue that there is. Yeah. All the things that we mentioned, plus perhaps other ones besides. I think what we need to know is a story. It's a story with a lesson to it. The lesson is actually quite simple. You will certainly be able to understand conceptually, at least, what the lesson is. The story is found in the book of Daniel. It's on the paper there, so you're going to need a white piece of paper or have your own Bible. It's a story that's found in the book of Daniel. Judah has been exiled to Babylon. So Judah is in Babylon. Daniel is on staff as a wise guy. In the story is the story of King Nebuchadnezzar having to vacate the throne. He's the king. He has to vacate the throne, and he spends 7 years as an animal. Now, perhaps everybody in this room has heard the story, but if you had never heard the story, then you heard there's a story about a guy who had to vacate, you know, being the king, and for 7 years he was an animal, you'd say, so what happened? And then you might say, well, why did that happen? So we're going to look at this story of Nebuchadnezzar vacating the throne and spending 7 years as an animal. And what happened? Why did it happen? I entitled a message I did on this the passage once, Severe Circumstances and Simple Lessons. The circumstances in the story are quite severe. I mean, a guy loses his sanity, he loses his job, he spends 7 years living like an animal. The circumstances are quite severe. But the lesson is rather simple. God did all that stuff to teach the guy a lesson. This is sort of a that'll teach you kind of story. I think the lesson is something that each of us needs to know. So we're going to take the time just to read the story. It's a marvelous story. I tried to help us a little bit by highlighting where the story itself gives the lesson that it teaches. It gives the reason, it gives the lesson that these circumstances, these severe circumstances, teach. It's going to be told by Nebuchadnezzar himself. It's first-person narration of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of all the peoples, nations, and men of every language that live in all the earth, may your peace abound. It has seemed good to me to declare the signs and wonders which the Most High God has done for me. How great are his signs and how mighty are his wonders. His kingdom is an everlasting kingdom, and his dominion is from generation to generation. I, Nebuchadnezzar, was at ease in my house and flourishing in my palace. I saw a dream, and it made me fearful. And these fantasies as I lay on my bed and the visions in my mind kept alarming me. So I gave orders to bring into my presence all the wise men of Babylon, that they might make known to me the interpretation of the dream. Then the magicians, the conjurers, the Chaldeans, and the diviners came in, and I related the dream to them, but they could not make its interpretation known to me. But finally Daniel came in before me, whose name is Belteshazzar, according to the name of my God, and in whom is the spirit of the holy gods. And I related the dream to him, saying, O Belteshazzar, chief of the magicians, since I know that a spirit of the holy gods is in you, and no mystery baffles you, tell me the visions of my dream, which I have seen, along with its interpretation. Now these were the visions in my mind as I lay on my bed. I was looking, and behold, there was a tree in the midst of the earth, and its height was great. The tree grew large and became strong, and its height reached to the sky, and it was visible to the end of the whole earth. Its foliage was beautiful, and its fruit abundant, and in it was food for all. The beasts of the field found shade under it, and the birds of the sky dwelt in its branches. And all the living creatures fed themselves from it. I was looking in the visions in my mind as I lay on my bed, and behold, an angelic watcher, a holy one, descended from heaven. He shouted out and spoke as follows: Chop down the tree and cut off its branches, strip off its foliage and scatter its fruit. Let the beasts flee from under it and the birds from its branches. Yet leaves a stump with its roots in the ground and with a band of iron and bronze around it in the new grass of the field. And let him be drenched with the dew of heaven and let him share with the beasts in the grass of the earth. Let his mind be changed from that of a man and let a beast's mind be given to him and let 7 periods of time pass over him. This sentence is by the decree of the angelic watchers. And the decision is a command of the holy ones. So first time it gives us the reason this is happening, the lesson. In order that the living may know that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows it on whom he wishes and sets over it the lowliest of men. This is a dream which I, King Nebuchadnezzar, have seen. Now you, Belteshazzar, tell me its interpretation. Inasmuch as none of the wise men of my kingdom is able to make known to me the interpretation, but you are able, for a spirit of the holy gods is in you. Then Daniel, whose name is Belteshazzar, was appalled for a while as his thoughts alarmed him. The king responded and said, Belteshazzar, do not let the dream or its interpretation alarm you. Belteshazzar replied, My lord, if only the dream applied to those who hate you in its interpretation to your adversaries. The tree that you saw, which became large and grew strong, whose height reached to the sky and was visible to all the earth, and whose foliage was beautiful and its fruit abundant, and in which food for all, under which the beasts of the field dwelt and in whose branches the birds of the sky lodged. It is you, O king, for you have become great and grown strong, and your majesty has become great and reached to the sky, and your dominion to the end of the earth. And that the king saw an angelic watcher, a holy one descending from heaven and saying, chop down the tree and destroy it, yet leave the stump and its roots in the ground, but with a band of iron and bronze around it in the new grass of the field. And let him be drenched with the dew of heaven, and let him share with the beasts of the field until 7 periods of time pass over him. This is the interpretation, O king, and this is the decree of the Most High, which has come upon my lord the king, that you be driven away from mankind, and your dwelling place be with the beasts of the field, and you be given grass to eat like cattle, and be drenched with the dew of heaven, and 7 periods of time will pass over you. Second time, the reason is given, the lesson, until you recognize that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows it on whomever he wishes, and that it was commanded to leave the stump with the roots of the tree. Your kingdom will be assured to you after you recognize that heaven rules. Therefore, O king, may my advice be pleasing to you. Break away now from your sins by doing righteousness, and from your iniquities by showing mercy to the poor, in case there may be a prolonging of your prosperity. All this happened to Nebuchadnezzar the king. 12 months later, he was walking on the roof of his royal palace of Babylon. The king reflected and said, is this not Babylon the Great, which I myself have built as a royal residence by the might of my power and for the glory of my majesty? While the word was in the king's mouth, a voice came from heaven saying, King Nebuchadnezzar, to you it is declared, sovereignty has been removed from you, and you will be driven away from mankind, and your dwelling place will be with the beasts of the field. You will be given grass to eat like cattle, and 7 periods of time will pass over you, until you recognize that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind and bestows it on whomever he wishes. Immediately the word concerning Nebuchadnezzar was fulfilled, and he was driven away from mankind and began eating grass like cattle, and his body was drenched with the dew of heaven until his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. But at the end of that period, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes towards heaven and my reason returned to me, and I blessed the Most High and praised and honored him who lives forever. For his dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom endures from generation to generation. All the inhabitants of the earth are counted as nothing, but he does according to his will in the host of heaven and among the inhabitants of earth. And no one can ward off his hand or say to him, what have you done? At that time my reason returned to me, and my majesty and splendor were restored to me for the glory of my kingdom. And my counselors and my nobles began seeking me out. So I was reestablished in my sovereignty, and surpassing greatness was added to me. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise, exalt, and honor the King of heaven, for all his words are true and his ways just. And I love this last sentence. And he is able to humble those who walk in pride. So there's the story. It's probably hard to overstate how great a king Nebuchadnezzar was. Scripture itself describes his kingdom as the head of gold over all other earthly kingdoms. Nebuchadnezzar is the head of gold. He's called the King of Kings. He has unrivaled power, majesty, wealth, grandeur. He's described in multiple places with terms often used only for God. He has sovereignty. He has dominion. I mean, it says he even rules over the animals and the birds. He's a ruler. He could raise up whoever he wanted to raise up. He could put down whoever he wanted to put down. He could keep alive anybody he wanted to keep alive. He could put to death anybody he chose to put to death. He could do what he wanted. He controlled his life. He controlled the lives of others. So he's a very great king. You can see it even here in the opening phrases of as he describes himself. You know, the king of the greatest earthly kingdom that there ever was. And Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. He calls in his wise guys. The wise guys can't interpret it. So he calls in Daniel. He tells Daniel the dream. It's a dream. He sees a great tree. It's beautiful. It's elegant. It provides shelter and food for, it says, all living creatures. But an angelic watcher comes down from heaven and says, chop it down, but leave the stump. Let him lose his mind and eat grass for 7 years. And the angelic watcher gives a reason for why the tree is going to be chopped down. Until you learn that the Most High is ruler over human beings. These will be the circumstances. You'll lose your kingdom, lose your mind, eat grass with the cattle for 7 years. Those will be the circumstances. The lesson will be until you learn that the Most High is ruler over human beings. So Daniel hears that dream. He understands its interpretation. And he says, whoa. You know, he can't even talk for a bit. He says to Nebuchadnezzar, I wish this was for your enemies and your adversaries rather than for you. But he interprets the dream. He says to Nebuchadnezzar, the dream is a picture of you and of your kingdom. The dream is about what's going to happen to you. He says, I hope you like eating dark green leafies because you're going to eat them for 7 years. You're going to have your mind change from the mind of a man to the mind of a beast, and you're going to eat grass for 7 years until you learn this lesson. Two words. Heaven rules. In my own mind, I've toyed with this. He could have been chronicled Nebuchadnezzar 7 years. What would he have said after the first year of eating grass? You know, how would he have articulated the lesson at that point? You know, he probably would have said something like, you know, the alleged superiority of the non-created over against the created is perhaps, you know, he might have sounded kind of like highfalutin and technical and, you know, not sure it's superior, but it's alleged. You know, and he goes on, but after 7 years of eating grass, he's narrowed his lesson down to two words. Heaven rules. Daniel encourages him to repent, to humble himself. You know, maybe the sentence can be changed. But 12 months later, Nebuchadnezzar, walking on the roof of his palace, says, is this not the great Babylon which I built by the might of my power, by the glory of my majesty? And the Lord chops the tree down. For 7 years, he chews the cud and can think about how the world is. And in those 7 years, he learns that the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind. Then after 7 years, he's restored to being king. And to his kingdom. Only now he's learned a lesson. He's learned heaven rules. He's learned that the Lord's dominion and his kingdom endures and is sovereign over all. He's also learned that heaven is able to humble those who walk in pride. Whatever position, whatever side you take on any issue of our day, any issue of our time, whatever position, whatever side you take on any issue under heaven, don't forget this very simple lesson. Heaven rules. Don't forget, as you take up positions and take sides and argue over the issues of our day, don't forget that the Most High is ruler over human beings and over the life of human beings. As we encounter the issues of our day, I think knowing that heaven rules means for all of us knowing that there are givens for any and every issue. Knowing that heaven rules means that when you deal with an issue, when you deal with gender identity, when you deal with how should we respond to war, terrorist activity, when you deal with what should we think about global warming, when you deal with any issue, knowing that heaven rules means you need to say, what are the givens that heaven has given in this situation for this issue? What are heaven's givens for this issue? What has heaven declared? What has heaven decreed concerning this issue? Knowing that heaven rules is especially difficult, I think, for the affluent, for the powerful, for the capable, for the beautiful people. People who are used to getting what they want. People who are used to doing what they like. People who are very comfortable defining their own reality. Feel like they have the power and the strength and the money to do exactly that. It's very hard and difficult for those people to remember heaven rules. It's hard to remember for people who are often tempted to say, is this not the great kingdom which I have built? Hard for those people to remember the lesson. When Paul, the Apostle Paul, was invited to address the Greeks, the intelligentsia, on the Areopagus on Mars Hill. Look at the part from Acts 17 there. So they want to know about what he's talking about. Seems to be proclaiming strange deities, and they want to know what it is he's talking about. Preaches a sermon very different than most sermons that he preaches. But he tells these folks, tells them about God. Often he talks about Christ. He doesn't talk about Christ here. He talks about God. About God who made the world and all things in it. He tells them about the one who is Lord of heaven and earth. He says of the Lord, he gives life and breath in all things. Everything comes from his hand. And then it says, he determines things. He sets boundaries. He appoints times. When we consider an issue, appropriate, it's necessary for us to ask, what has God determined concerning this issue? What has the maker of the world appointed? Where has the Lord of heaven and earth, where has he set the boundaries? Acknowledging and asking those types of things when you recognize heaven rules. He gets to appoint the times. He sets the boundaries. He determines. He decrees. So think about some issue of our day that you care about. Maybe some issue that you're troubled about. So then ask yourself, what are the givens? What are heaven's givens for that issue? Whatever it is for a second. Some issue of our time that troubles you, interests you, captures your attention. Ask yourself, what are the givens for that issue? When you ask what are heaven's givens, you're simply acknowledging that there's someone who is sovereign over this. You're simply acknowledging there is one who rules over this. The second thing you're acknowledging, it's not me. It's not me. I'm not sovereign over this. I don't rule over this, but there is one who does. Heaven rules. The Most High is ruler over things that happen to human beings. So ask, what is the one who rules? Like, what's he given? What has he decreed? What's he appointed? What's he determined? You know, what rulings has heaven, not the Supreme Court, what rulings has heaven given on this issue? Nebuchadnezzar doesn't at first, he doesn't think anyone except himself should be able to give input on issues. That's where he starts. Again, in the greatness of who he is as a king compared to like President Obama. President Obama was an errand boy compared to the glory and the majesty and the power and the sovereignty that Nebuchadnezzar had. So Nebuchadnezzar, nobody should give me input on any issue. And then he ate grass for 7 years and thought about it. And after 7 years thinking about that, he says, you know what? Heaven gives input. Heaven gives decisive input. Heaven rules. That's what I've learned. Were you to give me a paper, and on the paper you wanted me to state my positions, you wanted me to argue my side on every single issue of our time, I hope every position that I would represent, every side that I would take on every issue, I hope every position I take would bear recognition in it that I have learned this lesson, heaven rules. And you could see that in every position that I have, that behind it there's a recognition and acknowledgement the Most High is ruler over the realm of mankind. I also know that if any of my positions reflect simply my own arrogance and my own pride, my own thought that I can just fashion the kingdom and rule over it and direct it any way that I please, I also know that the Most High is able to humble those who walk in pride. So that story, as we deal, as we approach, as we take sides and positions, as we think about, as we argue the issues of our day, I think this is a story that every one of us needs to remember, needs to know. It's a story of very severe circumstances. The greatest human king that there ever was lost his mind, lost his kingdom, his sovereignty, everybody turned against him. He ate grass like a cow for 7 years. Not to learn about infralapsarianism, you know, and the implications for that of substitutionary atonement. You know, not that. He learned heaven rules. He learned the Most High is ruler over human beings and the life of humans. Heaven gives input. Heaven is able to humble anyone who walks in pride and thinks that they're the master. They find out that they're not. Don't forget, as you take positions, as you argue for the issues, that lesson. And again, I hope for myself that, you know, every position I have recognizes and acknowledges the givens that the ruler has given, you know, that the one who is sovereign. I think that's important for us. And if that doesn't settle all of the issues or where we should come out on them, but knowing that the one who is sovereign is the Lord, is the Most High, is really important for us. It's something that's forgotten, I hope you know, in our day. And again, Americans, we're powerful, we're affluent, we're beautiful, we're capable. We think we can form and fashion reality pretty much how we want. And we can determine our own course, and we can build our own kingdom. Nebuchadnezzar had a few things to say to us about how it worked out for him. So I hope that there's just groundwork as we go forward. We won't spend a lot of time on this, but for us to take hold of what the Lord himself has given in our situation is part of what we want to do as we consider the issues of our time.
How deep the Father's love.